Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Raw Knuckles Podcast. Please like, follow, and subscribe.
Are you ready to lace up your skates and dive headfirst into the rink? Look no further than my Fight Club. Raw Knuckles, exclusive Patreon.
Up by heavyweights here.
I'm Chris Nyland, and let me tell you about the Fight Club. You'll gain access to the raw, unfiltered conversations that make Raw Knuckles the ultimate hockey podcast. Say goodbye to interruptions and commercials with our ad-free episodes. Dive deeper into the stories that shape the sport with uncensored interviews that will keep you on the edge of your seat. But that's not all. As a member of any tier in the Fight Club, you'll also receive a 10% discount on all Knuckles merch so you can show off your inner badass wherever you go. And let's not forget about the puckload of exclusive content waiting for you. So what are you waiting for? Head over to Patreon to join the Raw Knuckles Fight Club and experience hockey like never before. Click the link below to get started.
But I think that you could probably save it to the locker room.
There you go.
Unless, Niles, it's...
Hey! Fuck off, oh, Niles. Fuck, come on. Don't be taking advantage of me now.
Sorry, sorry, Knuckles.
Nyland going ballistic. He's a freaking madman.
I'm Chris Nyland, and this is the Raw Knuckles Podcast. You do every TNT broadcast from Atlanta, not New York, right?
No, the only time we travel is sometimes the first game of the year, and then like on site, and then playoffs. For this year, it'll be the conference finals, because that's as far as we go. Last year, we traveled for the finals, because we had the finals. The year before that, we were Western Conference Finals, Edmonton, Colorado.
Cool.
So listen, we only have the rights for finals.
What are you flying private? You flying private or first class? What do you got going?
No.
He's flying on a pink jet.
I'm a fucking peasant. You know what though? They get us Delta first class, and fucking it basically feels like I'm in a private plane. Fuck, it's awesome.
Yeah, first class is awesome. Listen, Biz, I want to. You know, we talk about athletes. We see athletes who retire. They have issues after they retire. They have a hard time transitioning out of the game. I don't know if people can really appreciate just what a awesome transition you made from professional sports, hockey, into the real world. You're so popular. You know, the big hockey name, Gretzky, Bedard, now Crosby, Lemieux. But Biz's name is as big as all of them.
Oh, now, you're out of your fucking mind.
No, but people know who Biz is. And I'm serious. I'm not out of my fucking mind. Yeah. What I want to know, that transition from hockey to the world you're in now, did you plan on this?
No.
Were you kind of looking ahead to this? Or what was your plan for after hockey?
So I would say it's obviously a lot of luck and you know, things happening for a reason. You could use every cliche. So I would say it was based off two things, all that kind of happening, and then also an element of fear from the situation of kind of like it just slowly took place and everything was happening for a reason, was like starting Twitter and getting on social media. And I was always silly and a clown and loved the locker room. And even when I was playing in junior, when I was like playing 20 minutes as a D-man, like I was still fucking around in the locker room, probably as a result as why it didn't really transfer into my pro game. But I also, but then I was moved from D to forward, where when you're the fighter, Knuckles, you kind of get to, I guess, be the clown a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of worked out that way. And then jumping on social media and then showing that personality. And also, like, I kind of like to act and do silly shit. And, like, I love that stuff. So the Twitter snowballed into getting, like, side gigs with Sportsnet, doing some independent stuff, starting to get comfortable in front of the camera. With all the Twitter stuff led to me getting more, like, interviews and, like, post-media scrums and stuff, where normally a guy who was being healthy scratched 50% of the time, you weren't getting a lot of media reps. But I was. So I was starting to become comfortable in front of the camera and also interacting with, like, you know, whoever it was, like Todd Walsh, who's in Arizona. We would go back and forth all the time. So that element along with the fear element, where when I couldn't get an NHL contract, it was after my 5 year with the Coyotes, I went to a PTO in St. Louis and loved it and had a blast and was praying that I would at least get an AHL deal with them. So if, let's say, Revo went down.
So was the fear like, yeah, my career is going to be over? I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah.
No. He asked me how this all kind of happened.
Yeah.
And I said, along with everything kind of happening for a reason. And then the fear element was, I was, when I was depressed on my couch, because after playing 5 years pro, I went to a PTO in St. Louis, had an awesome camp, had fun at camp. The guys were amazing. And I couldn't even get an AHL deal because they had no contracts left. So I went home for a month and sat on my couch. And so there, like, I had nothing go, I was depressed, and the fear came from, like, when my career was going to be over, regardless when it was, you had to get up and get moving. Like, nobody was going to save you. Right. So I had felt that, but fortunately for me, I was able to get a deal in the American Hockey League, like about a month after that. Didn't work out in Portland where I was, went to Manchester, won a Calder Cup. It like completely changed my like life around. But the fear that was struck to me in that month of not having a career and it being in the hands of others forced me to start thinking about, when I retired, what were you going to do and how were you going to hit the ground running? So that's kind of, sorry, I know it was a long-winded answer, but there was a lot of components that drove me into what I do now and why it's evolved. Like, I get up every day and it's all I think about. Like, I don't really have a ton of a personal life. Like, I don't have a wife or kids. So there's a lot of factors involved, and then here we are. But I appreciate the compliment, and it's like you said, those other names, it's just like, no, I'm not on that level. I'm just some silly clown who was a jester in the locker room, yeah, who's been able to transfer it into media.
Yeah, there's no kids, like, they're not Paul Bissonnette in their driveway scoring game 7 overtime, right? Like, no one's doing that. Is that what you're saying?
Timmy, exactly. They might pick up a podcast, like, at Best Buy and drop a few F-bombs, and that's the inspiration I'm providing. And well, by the way, I have a funny knuckle story. So he called me about a month ago to do this, and I was referring to him as Niles, and I don't know, Chris Nyland, I feel like Niles is such a cool name. So the whole conversation, I'm going back and forth calling this Timmy, and at the end he's like, "Hey Biz, can I ask you a favor?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what's up, Niles?" He's like, "Don't call me Niles." Why do you hate me?
Because I hate people calling me by my last name or something like that.
Okay.
I think it's disrespectful.
No.
That's why. Okay. I don't like calling people by their last name unless it's part of their nickname, like a Stapes.
Okay. Oh, so. Timmy, I thought I was being so cool. Like, what's up, Niles? He's like, don't call me that.
You're one Niles away from being in a trunk of a car.
Yeah, buddy, exactly. And when he spoke like that, I'm like, oh my god! Like, I'm like, how do guys fight this guy in the NHL? He's so scary. He just turned it on like that.
Get into the action with Fight Club, Raw Knuckles' new exclusive Patreon. From ad-free episodes to uncensored content and discounts on merch, there's something for every hockey fan. Join the Fight Club today.
Got you. Biz, so, I just got done watching a video of like all 7 of Paul Bissonnette's goals. You got good ones in there.
Yeah. So,
I think one time the announcer was like, I don't even think he knew he scored.
Was that the Price goal? The one against Price?
Foot. I wasn't watching. That's why when that Zach Benson scored that one between his legs last night, I go, it looked exactly like the one I scored. My first.
So. So now the funny part, where's it come from? One, and then two, interjecting the humor into your analysis when you're doing TNT. It's different than being on Chiclets, right? You can say what you want on Chiclets. You find you have to kind of hold back when you're on TNT sometimes?
Yeah, it's just a different filter. And that's why sometimes, like, it'll get thrown to me, and you'll see my wheels just like, you can almost, like, see it on my face. Just kind of being like, yeah, you can't say that. Like, I was worried yesterday about the, you know, clean and jerk and the snatch, because we were talking about the Olympic lifts I used to do training, and, you know, things, some things can get yeah, crude. But yes, the double filter's hard, and that's why, like, I'll really make sure I get my rest on a game day and make sure I'm kind of fresh and top to mind. But also, like, from a humor standpoint, we're trying to be silly idiots on Chicklets. Like, I like just getting people going, like talking about William Nylander being the it guy, and, you know, talking about him whipping his hog out with Madison Beers on Zoom, just like silly, stupid shit. But on the broadcast, I always want to make sure we're also teaching a lot, because we're talking to the American viewer. So I think that people always want to learn more about the game. And then obviously the humor is important too, because you want to give them a little bit of everything. You want to, like, I love it when, like, Wayne talks about these stories, these old school stories behind the scenes. And Knuckles, I'm sure you know him to a certain degree. He is like a hockey nerd, like in a positive way, where he's consumed so much about the game, and his memory is ridiculous. Yeah. He remembers all these stories through history of hockey, and, like, he, you know, anything about Guy Lafleur or Gordie Howe, like, he was obsessed with hockey growing up. And Gordie Howe is, like, his idol. And it's cool to see, because Gordie Howe also gave back so much to the game. And he always was available, and, you know, autographs for everybody, and got to do these interviews. And, like, the fact that he's even still doing the panel. But I think that because he idolized him, he took that away, where he feels like he's indebted to the game forever, which it's amazing to see. And it's amazing for hockey fans and anybody who gets to listen to him share all these stories on air.
So,
yeah, it's awesome.
TNT, you got Chicklets, all yeah, the stuff you do, you're constantly going, like you said, you need to get your rest. What do you get the most enjoyment out of? Is it Chicklets? Like, you do the Chicklets Cup, you do the golf, you do the, you know, ball hockey thing with what's that ugly face kid? Nose. What's his
name? Nose face killer.
Nose face.
He's actually from Boston.
Is he?
Yeah, Boston area. We do these. Some people who are listening might not know what you're talking about. We do these ball hockey tournaments, and we threw the first one in Detroit. Like, I wasn't even playing. It was Grinnelli's idea. I'm like, okay, we'll go there. We got banged up for 3-4 days, and this kid showed up first day, just like in my face. I'm like, what? He's like, we're gonna win this tournament. We don't even care that Werenski's team's playing. Knuckles, Werenski, an NHL all-star, had a bunch of him and his hockey buddies playing in the tournament, and sure enough, that nose face killer, so he's became a villain in the Chicklets world. He beat him in the round robin, and he, like, bloodied up Werenski's nose. So Werenski and his team were like, we're going to speed bag these guys when we meet them back in the finals. And this nose face guy took his team to the finals, and then they beat them again in the finals. Wow. So I'm like, this motherfucker, I'm like, I'm playing in the next ball hockey, and I'm getting Terry Ryan involved, because I know he plays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Terry plays.
So we stack our team, buddy, and we go to Vegas for the second annual Chicklets Cup. They beat us in the round robin, and then they mercy us in the finals. We've yet to win one of our own ball hockey tournaments, and we're bringing in pros. But what's crazy is, so we're now on the fourth one. We did the last one in Buffalo. We went Buffalo back to back. He won the third one again, but now teams are starting to hear about it from the ball hockey community. So us and Nose Face Killer's team, we didn't even reach the finals this year. Wow. It was two other teams that beat us out in the semis. So, yeah, that is one thing that has brought my competitive juices back in the Chicklets world, is doing these ball hockey tournaments. But Knuckles, doing these ball hockey tournaments, after you're done playing the whole weekend and
you're
having
right,
some pops, yeah, your body, I felt like I was a crash test dummy in a car accident, dude. I was hurting. But yeah, that is such a fun element to our job.
Why is he so good? Nose Face Killer? What's so good about him and his team? Do you know him, Tim? Nose Face?
No, but I'm like offended that he's beaten, or any. I don't fucking know him.
He's offended.
I'm mad right now.
He's been doing it his whole life, and he's got like a cleft lip, and he talks a lot of stuff. And like, I swear to God, every time we see him, he gets uglier and uglier. And hey, I'm not the best looking guy either. We could chirp each other and we joke about it, so I just started calling him the nose face killer. And I think that Brad Marchand was kind of, isn't that his nickname too? So he's almost like the Brad Marchand / like he's the GOAT of ball hockey. We've established him as this ultimate villain. The nose face killer.
So, nose face killer. I love it. And so all those things you do, all the things you do, what is like the most fun for you to do? You really look forward to it.
I would say the Chicklets Cups are up there. The Sandbaggers, I get a little bit nervous because Witt's the golfer and he saves our bacon usually, and I can show up sometimes and shoot 110, but then sometimes I'm able to somehow turn it on and shoot like a 87 or 90. Timmy, we played you guys and I was brutal. Like Timmy, it was you and
we beat him.
You and I'm drunk.
Jimmy.
Yeah. Jimmy Hayes. And you guys were just incredible. You guys beat us on like the 15th hole. You guys
Witt fucking texted me and Jimmy like that night. He's like 8 a.m. He's like 8 a.m. $1,000 each, and he fucking smoked. I mean, he smoked me. I was like, he's nuts about golf, and he's sick. Witt's good.
Oh yeah, he's sick. Yeah, oh, he's unbelievable. He can pound the ball. So I get a little bit nervous because I don't want to mess it up for him and annoy him all day. but what else? So the best thing about Chicklets is because we have free reigns and it's our brand, we're able to kind of do any of these things. And Knuckles, going back to, I guess, my ultimate answer would probably be the funnest stuff for me would be the acting.
Are you ready to take your love for hockey to the next level? Join the Fight Club Raw Knuckles exclusive Patreon to unlock amazing perks like ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and even a chance to win a game day experience with me in the Habs Cave. Don't miss out on this ultimate hockey experience.
But anytime we're able to kind of have free creative reign, Knuckles, that's where I love it and I'm having my most fun.
I could imagine, right? And you wonder, like you said, how many companies would allow that? Okay, you write what you want. We'll just let you fucking run with it.
But not many.
Apparently, it worked with Watson Gloves, and that's awesome. Analyzing players, like you play the game. Tim's been there, and it's tough sometimes. You want to be really honest with guys and how guys are playing. How difficult is that for you when you have to criticize guys and come down on them if they're not playing well? You look at Edmonton right now, Drysdale, McDavid. They run that team. They're not playing well. They don't play D. You see where that team is right now. How difficult is it for you to really get on the critical
I never really say a certain individual stinks. Like I don't go
well, not stinks, but not playing well or something.
I have no problem saying like right now Edmonton's defensive structure is a joke. It sucks. Like I have no problem saying that. Like it's like look at McDavid's face on the bench. Like he's saying it with his emotions, right? So I don't personally have an issue. And as I get older, and I'm sure you would imagine, the separation for the game where these kids are so young, like I try to not be too critical, like because I wasn't a very good player individually. Like I was a healthy scratch, but I'm also self-deprecating about it. But I usually try to tell you why they're sucking and do it that way. Like even with Line A, like Line A being healthy scratch, I saw some people being like, oh, like you're going to lose the room. And it's just like, we all know, like, I watch Line A out there, and, like, his body language doesn't suggest when he's not scoring goals, it's like kind of like, why are we paying this guy $8.5 million? Like, if you're making $8.5 million, like, you see guys who make that. Like, look at Dylan Larkin. He's taking faceoffs. He's killing penalties. He's winning puck battles along the wall. He's setting up He's setting up whoever his line mates are. He's scoring goals himself. Like, he makes 9.5. So I just don't really – like, the body language and effort aspect, I'm like, why are people – like, who cares they healthy scratched him? Like, that would – like, who cares? Like, he's probably deserved to be healthy scratched. But on the flip side, I also said, well, he has dealt with some concussion stuff this year. And his father passed away close to 2 years ago. So yeah. you always try to bring up the empathetic side of, like, there might be a reason mentally he's not into it right now. Like, his concussion, the father thing, that's a lot piling on him. Like, but if he's not playing well, like, just because he's a star player, he still deserves to be healthy scratched. I mean, do you feel the same, Timmy? Like, were you like, who cares? Yeah, sit him down for a night.
Yeah, no, I felt this. Liney even said something like, this is the most embarrassing thing in my life. And I'm like, embarrassing? I was like, fuck. I love being a healthy scratch just because I was in the NHL, but I'm not him. But you know what I mean? I was just like, dude, that's not embarrassing. Go learn something. But yeah, man, I mean, it's just a different game now, dude. That's how I feel. Like, and I think, do you enjoy what you're doing now more than when you played?
I would say yeah, because I don't have to fight anymore and I don't have to deal. I don't know if I developed it from playing, but in Knuckles, you might attest to this. I always had a fight or flight because I was a role player, and if I made a mistake early in the game, the chances were my ice time was going to dwindle, and then I was probably being pulled out of the lineup the next game. No room for error. On top of the anxiety about, okay, who am I going to have to fight? And, you know, am I going to be picking up my teeth on the ice? So I've developed that fight or flight to, that's how the emotions I get the day of a broadcast, the day of a podcast, coming into this interview, or even doing an interview.
So you get nervous.
Get this, yeah, fight or flight.
You know, Chicklets. I want to get to Chicklets and the thing about Chicklets. So Witt decides to do a podcast. You're still playing. And he ends up getting matched up with RA from Charlestown, the Rear Admiral, and they get going. When did they put the bug in your ear? And when did you kind of start getting excited about this could be something?
So Witt originally sent out the tweet asking, I think it was me and Colby Armstrong, and at the time I was still playing, and I didn't even know what a podcast was. I'm like, And also, because I'd signed with LA's team in the minor league system, one of the agreements was from Dean Lombardi that I was going to stay off social media. So they were very anti-individual standing out. They were more about flying under the radar, greater good of the team. And hey, they won 2 Stanley Cups and we got an AHL championship. I think he knows what he was doing. So I said, hey, Witt, I'm out. I can't do that. So Army said the same thing where I don't think he knew what podcasts were. So Rear Admiral saw his tweet and he reached out to him. And that's how it originally started. Like, how Witt, and because RA had worked with Barstool and Witt had followed Barstool and knew Dave Portnoy, Witt, like, I'm shocked that he agreed to do it with Rear, right? Because, like, yeah. This guy just finished making 25 sheets in the show. Now he's doing a podcast on RA's couch, sharing a mic. Like, come on. You know, this guy's snapping tape to tape passes with Crosby. Now he's swapping spit with Rear Admiral.
I was like, man, I hope I never retire. I hope I never retire when I saw that.
So they start out the story of how Grinnelli got involved is he was doing radio, he could produce, and he had but RA was doing it through his mixer. RA's mixer broke one podcast after RA had driven over and spent an hour recording. He's like, oh my god, the mixer broke. So RA remembered hearing reading the email from Grinnelli. Grinnelli joins on. They had me on for a couple interviews between like episode 1 and 60 something, whenever I hopped on. And because I would come on and let it fly, Witt asked me again and he was persistent. And at that time, I had just retired, started doing radio for the Coyotes. I said, Witt, let me get this 1 year under my belt and then let me reshuffle the deck. And that film project I did the summer before was about to be released. And I said, you know what? Why don't I come on join the podcast? We released this film project to kind of show that we have a different bag. And we put it on YouTube, and we, you know, and we kind of, this is how we do this liftoff. And it was after the season had ended with the Coyotes. And I jumped on, and the rest is history. We started doing more video work. We started, you know, getting more guests. We started doing, at some points, two podcasts a week. And then it evolved from there, and it took on a mind of its own. And with the vodka, the sandbaggers, the chicken cups, the FDNY, NYPD, we're doing broadcasts. It just, it's been a wild, wild, wild 6 years, but, you know, relentless work towards it and growing it. And with the help of Grinnell, Witt, RA, and the rest of the staff, it's been a fucking crazy ride.
Meteoric rise, and it's unbelievable. And good on you.
It's awesome. Yeah, it opened the door for You opened the door for like all podcasts, hockey related, in my opinion. So it's awesome.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's no question. No question about it. And it is.
That's the biggest compliment. And but like I always tell everyone, I said it's awesome because the more the better, the more the merrier, because you guys are going to get maybe a guy on that I've never heard of, or we would have never, and your connection with him extracts these incredible stories for any hockey fan who is going to come by your podcast and listen, right? And then it continues to grow, and people fall in love more and more with the game. So it's awesome to see, and it's you know, it just so happens we were one of the first. I don't know who else was the first actual. Ours was just able to kind of grow to a certain level.
And the name is awesome too. Spit and Chicklets. Like, come on.
RA.
That's a fucking awesome name. It is.
RA is the godfather of the podcast. And, you know, without his persistence, it obviously never happens. And I'm pretty sure that he thought of the name, and he kind of drew the logo on a napkin. So just an incredible, incredible name that he came up with, and or if he heard it at a bar or something, or and it just clicked. I don't know. I should probably get the story from him how he thought of it.
Get closer to the action in the Fight Club with the Raw Knuckles podcast over on Patreon. Whether you're an instigator, enforcer, or aiming for the Hall of Fame, there's something for everyone waiting for you. Don't miss your chance to be part of the ultimate hockey community. So Biz, now, God, you talked about coaches, how you love your coaches. You learned from a lot of them. And even Terrien, you know, he taught you to dig in and work hard, all this stuff. I want to bring up Babcock because you had the balls, one, along with the knowledge, because you did talk to somebody about what had happened, and you had the balls to go with it. And a lot of people were saying, yeah, you know, that they weren't sure this, should you have said it or not, but you did. You had the GM to do it, which I love. And then we see what happens from that. And it was true. We have Marty Walsh on. And I talked to Marty about that. One of the first things he did, you know, was go down there and interview the players and talk to the players. And he actually told Tim and I that it wasn't, he said it wasn't just that. There were some other things that really bothered him.
Yes.
And I don't know what those things were. I didn't push him on it. He didn't.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Me neither.
And I got to wonder what the hell that was, you know? And that's just crazy what he was doing. Fuck. What the hell is it with that guy? How's he not learn?
Yeah, so I heard the same thing. So like, and like, I didn't dig for information, and even if I did find out, I probably wouldn't say what it was on here. I'll be vague about probably the worst thing that I heard was just having a young guy over, assuming the guy was going to go over there for lunch in the summertime in Michigan to Babcock's like lake house. And then when he got there, he asked him to see his phone, and he hooked it up to AirPlay mode and looked through it. And I heard it was photos and texts. So just obviously a pretty bizarre interaction that you would have with your head coach. Like that's just obviously normal workplace, like you're done.
No,
like that's
you're fucking done is right.
That's an HR nightmare. So if we can go back, it kind of happened over the course of two podcasts where I completely forgot that I'd even told Witt that I'm like, oh, listen to this one. I'm like, I'm going to talk about this on the podcast, because a player had reached out originally and told me like about the phone thing. And he was now doing it to guys in Columbus. And my buddy who texted me, I know that how his experience with Babcock had gone. And listen, there's a difference between like a softer generation and not being able to be accountable and poopy pants. And then things that like he was doing and saying, which like my favorite coach ever was Mike Stuthers. And he would come on and lose it on us between periods and like single guys out. And I love him. I love him to this day. And I talk to him all the time. So we're talking about two different things. So my buddy's experience and the way and how ticked off he sounded when telling me what was going on made me want to say it on the podcast to make players on Columbus aware of it, but not to kick up the dust that ended up coming from it.
Yeah.
It just so happens the day that we drop the podcast, it's NHL Media Day in Vegas. So this thing, we put the clip out. The guys do the way they clip things. Like, you know, that's a behind the scenes production thing. And this thing goes nuclear. It was like 7 million views on the Twitter video that we put out. So all of a sudden they're putting out the fires, this and that. But ultimately it came down to the statement coming out. It was our word versus theirs. And then thankfully, the more the players union dug into it, it ended up everything I obviously said was happening, which would had happened in Toronto before to the player that I used to, that I know was happening now in Columbus. And it just seemed as if though this guy hadn't learned his lesson. So I just wanted to kind of be like, bring light to it and be like, hey, buddy, fuck off. And then as a result, everything ended up happening where he ended up getting canned. Yeah. Like even originally when
was your phone just off the hook? Was like, did
it yeah, just go it nuts went, it went crazy, that? But yeah, like, but remember, I was saying it to just kind of be like, yo, idiot, smarten up. You already got canned for this. I'm like, what are you fucking doing now? Like, you just came away from a four-year absence and you're doing this shit before training camp starts? Like, what planet am I on? So yeah, and then like I said, never in my wildest dreams did I think it was going to get to what it got to and or would he be fired? It was more just to make him be like, hey, smarten the fuck up, buddy. So that's the story, and there was never any like I'm gonna be a white knight. It was me looking out for my buddy, and my buddy was the one who said, say this on the podcast. And after hearing it, like my buddy had been traded there to Toronto, and like he went there in the summer, and the first thing that happened was he's like, let me see the phone. And he had other teammates apologizing to him because he's like, hey, they had a designated guy that would warn guys when they got to the team to be aware that if you go in the coach's room, don't bring your phone. And if he asked, say, tell him you left it in the car. Yeah. Like what?
I have it in my safe at home. Yeah. Fuck. You fucking weirdo.
You bring in a flip phone. You're like, oh, here. It's like a fake flip phone. Yeah. Here's my burner. So yeah. I hope I did a good job of breaking that all down.
No, you did.
All the praise should go to the PA. All the praise should go to the guy who made me aware of it. And it sucks that the guys in Columbus were put in that situation. And it was probably a very messy thing to have to deal with before the season started. And fuck, have they been off to a tough start.
What do you think the fuckstick Babcock was expecting to find on these phones? What kind of information? What do you think? He's trying to get a read of someone's personality, you think? Or what do you think he was looking for?
The comment that was made to the people that I know that he went through was like, oh, so you like to party. I think that he wants to know who's like 1,000% invested, where they're like not drinking and having fun and going out and or I don't know, like maybe you have a dark sense of humor and you share like crazy memes with your buddies. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what he wanted to garner from that. The text message situation from the young player who went over, apparently he searched his name and there was text message like of maybe that player's buddy, like you know, Babcock's name coming up via text.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe he was embarrassed at his actions and thought the guys behind the scenes would be joking around and texting behind his back. And his insecurity led him to look to the phone where it's like, hey, buddy, like, yeah, maybe they are saying you're a psycho. Maybe fucking, maybe act otherwise where their experience won't be. So they won't be texting about that. Or the next time their buddy's like, hey, what's Babcock like? It's like, you know what? He's actually a changed guy and a good dude. He wasn't looking through my dick pics that I was sending to this Instagram bot. You know?
Naked with a leather too. Belt like, around your neck. Yeah.
It's like, that's another thing too. It's like the privacy aspect is like somebody, I think it was Sarah Siv, who does great reporting.
From Carolina, right?
From Carolina. Yeah. I think she was with The Athletic. She might still be. She does work with BR with us now and TNT. But she's like, what if a player was a closet gay and he wasn't comfortable coming out yet and hadn't even came out to his parents? And now Mike Babcock knows before the parents.
Right. And he sits him on the bench.
The phone is a private area. And that's where the line was crossed and just bizarro land.
Speaking of lines, how about the fucking red line? Now, I get the NHL, and I watched today's game as opposed to, you know, back in my day, a lot of fighting, the two-line pass, all that. We talk about concussions. We talk about the health of the players, the speed of the game. They want to sell speed. They want to sell that physical aspect. Players today are so good with the puck, all that stuff. Do you think the red line, and everybody worries about the trap coming back, I get it, but do you think – the red line coming back into hockey would be a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't have any strong opinion on it. Sidney Crosby was asked what rule change would he implement, and he said bring the red line back. And I think Wayne also agreed with him.
Yeah.
And also a lot of these other players with that hockey mind. So who the hell is Paul Bissonnette to disagree with these guys? As soon as they said it, I'm like, okay, they're on to something that I have no clue about. And for whatever reason, they think that that's going to bring back more offense and more like make the game better. I would be down to bring it back, but I don't think they would ever do it because I think it's probably deemed one of the best decisions that Gary Bettman has ever made from an offensive perspective because – all of a sudden, the offense did pick up. But Knuckles, you could also argue that there are just these different eras of hockey that change the game. Whereas now, all of a sudden, the skill set and what these players are able to do and how they're able to shoot the puck because of the technology, it's like now we're back up to McDavid in certain players and enough players being able to break 100 points. Where there was a time where if you were a point of game player, you were the elite player in the league. Like I think they call it the dead puck era.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it is Sid and Wayne and some of these great players think to bring it back is the right call, but I am all ears and I'd be down to try it. But I don't think, would you agree that I don't think it's ever happening? That's the last thing they would consider changing.
Yeah, I think they have a real hard time with it. And now, if it could be brought up, I don't know which way the players would vote. And I say that because, listen, here's the deal. I think these guys are so talented today, and they're worried about the trap. Well, teams still fucking trap, and they can trap if they want through the neutral zone. You can clog the neutral zone. You're either playing a 1-2-2, a 1-3-1, or a left-wing lock. Like, it's – if you want to clog that neutral zone, you can. I think – what is missed a lot in the game is teams coming up the ice together and really being able to pass their way through the neutral zone into the offensive zone and actually getting a forecheck going. Because you look, right, that stretch pass, right, what's it do? Well, it opens up the neutral zone, but it allows a player to maybe chip the puck in, but it also allows a D-man to get back there quicker knowing that it's coming. And it takes away the forechecking part of the game. You know, I think it really – so there's – I don't know.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I agree with you completely that it also – like so I do believe, though, the successful teams in the league do come up the ice together. Yeah. And that's one thing where – like I feel like the Leafs tend to be a type of stretch team that like that long home run pass. And, you know, you can name others where I feel like the successful teams, like LA, when I played for the Kings organization, low and slow for the centerman through the blue paint in the D zone coming up, and you come out, you know, as a five man group. And if, you know, if it, once it gets moved to the wall, if the centerman is covered by the F3, you activate the net front defenseman. Yeah. And then come up the weak side. So those are all things that we did together. And, yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I think it's also going to add like this annoying, like coach's challenge, just to add up 50 more of those. Like, because the game's so fast and they already do that with the offsides, and that's fucking annoying. You know what I mean? I think it's annoying. Like, I don't know. Right. Am I wrong? You know, like, challenge. I don't know.
I agree with you, Timmy. You're saying that all of a sudden they're going to be challenging two line passes, where I think they should abolish both challenges at both lines.
Yeah. I hear you, Tim. All right. Serious standpoint. Do you have, when you look back over your career, do you have any regrets in hockey? And if you do, if you could change it, what would it be? Do you have any regrets during the game?
Yeah, I would probably spend more time with my teammates from a not drinking and partying perspective. I think I partied and drank too much. I was just young and in the NHL, and I couldn't even believe that I was even actually there. And I don't want to say I took it for granted. I just kind of took it all in, where I would show up to the rink and work hard, and that wasn't, I would still train in the summer, but I just had a little, I think that if I would have boozed and partied less and just kind of like hung out with my teammates from a better connecting level, obviously drinking, there's team camaraderie there, but more of like a life level connection, and probably listen to a lot more of Shane Doan's advice, I think I would have been better off. I also think that it would have, my NHL career probably could have lasted 2-3 years longer, like just from maybe taking it a little bit more seriously. But I believe being that idiot and clown and kind of experiencing all that is what kind of led me into the post career. So I wouldn't change it. And no, it's not really a regret.
Yeah, that's
the one thing. If I had to go back and do, maybe I would change.
I hear you. Is mom and dad still alive, Biz?
Yeah, my parents are alive. Yeah.
Okay. So, Dad, are you close with your dad? And what does your dad think of certainly your hockey career? How proud was he of you? And then this next chapter in your life, he must be like, what the hell, my son, like, what he's done with himself. Like, he must be proud, no?
He's always been a very proud guy. He was never, if I didn't want to play, he would have been like, okay. But he was ultra supportive, and when I was in the NHL, he'd be bouncing off the walls in the rink, meeting friends with people at the urinal for crying out loud.
He was a steel worker, your dad?
Tough guy? I just saw somebody in the chat say, was he tough?
Yeah.
And no, my father was a softy, and I'm a softy too, like at heart. He's a very loving, caring guy. I would say that as the years have gone on, sometimes he's maybe not the best at expressing his emotions, so he's a little bit old school in that sense. But he was always a loving and supporting father, and he worked hard, man. He worked at a steel mill, got up every day at 5 o'clock and went to work and supported my hockey career. And, you know, Graf skates were $800. He'd probably have to work a full week to pay for them, you know. So
right.
in the steel plant. So incredible father and incredible upbringing. My mother was a college professor who was actually the breadwinner and had an insane work ethic. I am a lot closer with my mom because we share the same brain. We can interact on a high level. Whereas my dad's okay sitting on the couch eating potato chips, watching sports all day. And if it wasn't for my mom, the bills wouldn't get paid.
I got one for you, Biz.
She runs the show and his show.
Viz, Nux, he hate Nux hates two things he hates most in life is being called Niles and the iPad on the bench. Do you like the iPads on the bench?
No, I understand why they're doing it, and maybe because this younger generation, that's how they learn. I'm okay with some people can learn by when you talk to them. Some people need to be visual learners, and I would consider that being a visual learner. But I think that you could probably save it to the locker room.
There you go.
Unless Niles, it's
hey, it's, fuck off, oh, Niles. Fuck, come on. Don't be taking advantage of me now.
sorry, Knuckles. But I would say that, like, what if it's something on power play where you get an opportunity later in that period? Like, it's just, like, it's hard for me to take such a strong stance against it. But I love how old school coaches like Torts is like, get these fucking iPads off the bench. You know?
Yeah.
It would be the same as I think that when guys grab them, when they come back after every shift, I think that that would concern me. If I'm a general manager and I go watch a junior game that I'm scouting of a top prospect and he's grabbing the iPad after every shift, I would do some digging.
All right.
Doesn't Suzuki do it?
Yeah, some of them do it. I don't like when they look at it on the bench. Like, get ready for the next fucking shift. Watch the game. If you got an issue, like you had a problem on the ice with one of your wingers and you had to talk to them about it. And between periods, go and fucking say, can we look at something, coach, or whatever. Look at it in the locker room. I hate it on the bench. I fucking hate it. But I'm not there. Is there anything, if you look at Paul Bissonnette today, and you have that self-reflection, like you just said, when you look back when you played, the drinking pot, like I had to take a good look at myself and I had to take that out of my life, no question about it. Is there anything, because I made some changes in my life, is there anything that Paul Bissonnette would change in his life today if he, in that self-reflection piece?
That's a great freaking question, Knuckle.
Trying to get you on that higher level like your mom.
Yeah. Well, I just think as you get older, you just try to really understand what's important and become more selfless. And I guess it's hard because I don't have kids, right? And I'm not married. And those are usually things that really advance those types of things. I think I was like maybe a late bloomer because, you know, I left home at 16 and, you know, it's almost like you're fending for yourself. So you're kind of in this survival mode. And as you get older, you're just more of just thinking about like how to, you know, what's the next guy going through? So you always try to be nice to everybody and constantly remind yourself. So I guess I wouldn't change it. It's just continue to try to evolve that side of being more of a humanitarian, trying to do more for others and being more empathetic. Cool. So just more of that stuff. I think that when you're 25 in the NHL and you got the world by the balls, I don't think I don't think that's top of mind. You're chasing girls and worrying about your next. Oh, mm-hmm. Where are we going next?
Yeah.
So just kind of growing into that. I would also say maybe men are a little bit later in that category.
For sure.
Maybe that's a sexist stereotype that I'm going to end up getting canceled for, but.
You're uncancelable. You can't be canceled.
Yeah.
No, don't say that.
Knock on wood.
I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm
calling all hockey lovers. Upgrade your podcast experience by becoming an enforcer. Gain access to the greatest hockey doc ever, The Last Gladiators. And don't settle for ordinary. Join the Fight Club over on Patreon today. What do you, well, you talk about that, you're not married. Do you want to be married one day? And if you do, listen, or have a family, but if you do, you're going to have to find an awfully special woman.
To be able to
deal with the way you go. You're gone all the time. You're like a Navy SEAL, fucking gone 8 months a year.
Yeah, I had an awesome girl, and I and it, I just, I couldn't find the balance. Like I just, my mind and head were too occupied, and I just, it's hard, man. Like it's, yeah, I wasn't ready to make that type of commitment. And she, you know, she wanted a family. She was a, you know, wonderful, loving, caring, like just all the things. Like, and yes, to put up with me, you definitely have to be all those things, because my mind's never, rarely in the present, right? So yeah, I think that one day I'm gonna see if I can get there. But I've always also been one where if I'm gonna bring a child onto this planet, like I want to be a present father and you know, have a present parenting, what do you call
role,
it?
Role.
Because that's how I was raised, and I feel that I probably feel that there's a lot of people who shouldn't be having kids who have kids because they're not ready for that type of commitment to be present and involved and support them and you know, be selfless for their children. So yes, I believe that I'm going to want to pass that on and be that person one day. I just don't have the time to do it. So until I'm ready to say I'm ready for that commitment, I don't think I'm going to do it. I would say that I have a number in my head about 45. I think that I would probably want to start having kids, which and is,
well, you're 38.
So how many kids, now. Do you have out there though? Really? How many kids do you have out there?
That you know of.
Well, on Father's Day, I always shut my phone off. So I don't know. None so far. And I mean, I commend people who do it. Timmy, how many you got?
I got two, and I love to hate them.
I heard it's the most rewarding.
No, they're awesome.
Thing in the
they're
world.
Awesome.
And yeah. Another thing too, it's like I wake up and the first thing I think about is work and Chicklets and what's going on with TNT and what are we doing next. And I think that when you have kids, you wake up and all of a sudden you have this other concern that you have to worry about 24/7.
Oh yeah.
And that is a very strong burden. And now I get why they have a day to celebrate mothers and fathers. They should get a week.
Yeah,
so Biz, you're not a big you're not a big cheese. You still do all your own scheduling.
That's
you have help.
I don't have an assistant. That's what everybody keeps telling me to get.
An assistant.
But I do have a guy named Jeff Jacobson. So, you know, Grinnelli and all those guys, they do the podcast side, and you know, Grinnelli helps in so many different areas. Jeff Jacobson is like my agent slash helps me with all things decision making and how to navigate it all, and I trust him dearly. We were friends before anything, and he helped me. Like at one point, one of my other buddies said, "Hey, you should have Jeff take a look at that." And I was like, "Oh, like he does that?" And he's like, "Yeah, he does a speaking company, owns a speaking company, but he helps with like types of contracts and this." And that's how the relationship started. So he helps me with all that type of stuff. But I'm not some guy cruising around with like a film team, or I'm from Welland, Ontario. I'm very simple guy.
Because this is a hockey podcast, and you do a hockey podcast. Who is today the most underrated player in the NHL, and who's the most overrated?
Oh my God! Oof, underrated, underappreciated. To give me like a minute to
We gave you an hour earlier. We'll give you a minute. Fuck.
Yeah, we still have part two of this. We still have part two of this. You got plenty of time.
It's Thanksgiving and I'm in a hotel room by myself in Atlanta, boys. I can outlast you, I promise. Do either you guys have a name in mind as far as underrated, underappreciated?
Underrated.
Fuck.
Think about a guy maybe in Tampa.
Kucherov is he's so good. But, I mean, Point maybe?
Yeah, Point. I like that one.
Point's one of my guys. Yep. Underrated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we always think of, scoring points, goals, assists, all that stuff. But, boy, does that kid bring it and just does not. I don't think overall he gets the attention he deserves, but cool.
I mean, people might say, ah, he's talked about all the time, but like what Crosby's doing at his age still is like, it's insanity with the time that he's lost and inflation for his era and stuff. I think that he ends up on the Mount Rushmore of hockey. Some people might say, oh, he's already there, but he has to go down as the top four players all time. If he does this for another 2-3 years, If he wins another cup, it's undeniable. Yeah. But if he's putting up 100 points at 36, 37, 38, like who did that?
Yeah.
Who did that?
Who is your Mount Rushmore? Who else is on there?
Well, obviously Wayne. You have to put Gordy. And then you have to put
I think
you have to put Bobby Orr because he kind of nobody had ever seen anything like that from a defenseman. The only thing that sucks is the longevity aspect of what he was
10 years, lucky, right? 9,
yeah.
10 years he had, but still.
And then is there a fourth that you would put before Sid? I mean, people would.
Mario?
Mark, Jesus Christ. So yes,
Mario.
Like and Wayne would even tell you if he stayed healthy, he would have broke his record. So I guess it's hard to remove one of those guys because they're like kind of the founding fathers. But I would say that if Crosby does this if he does what he's doing now for another 3 years and he's won the cups he's won and the awards he's won, do you not say that he might be there instead of Bobby Orr? Am I swearing? Have I offended you more than calling you Niles?
Yeah, I think you have to put Orr there either way. You have to put Orr there.
So
he revolutionized the game. He changed the game.
So as far as underrated, I mean, that's kind of an off the board answer and underrated. And then I don't know, Timmy, you help me out here. It's such
overrated. Come on, Tim.
Overrated?
Grind it.
No, I mean, that's. I can't even think of anyone. Overrated, maybe. I don't know. Who sucks right now besides McDavid? No, they're actually not. I mean, the team sucks, but.
Most overrated NHLer. Come on.
I honestly can't, and people probably think I'm just trying to be too nice. I can't think of somebody off the top. Now, is the chat saying anybody? I didn't just see.
No.
It says Lemieux or Howe.
How about?
That was for the Mount Rushmore.
That was Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
How about Seth Jones?
Well, he's being paid. I think that people understand what kind of the situation. I think that he it was a desperate team at a desperate time, and he was kind of that guy, and yeah, it was an overpay. It's kind of a Darnell Nurse situation,
right?
Would she be making $6.5 million, not 9.5, or in Seth Jones's case, or I guess they probably make around the same. Seth might even be closer to 10. So. Yeah, it's unfortunate because some of these guys just get paid way too much. And, I mean, like, look what Huberto is going through right now. Whew. He's making 10 and a half the next 8, right? So
What about Kuznetsov? Is he paid a lot?
No. I bet he's probably making $7 million. And I don't think anybody thinks he's anything other than, a good offensive threat. But – with all the, he doesn't even want to be in Washington right now, so that's kind of a tough situation. I got nothing for you. I got the Crosby underrated. I know it's a horrible answer.
No, that's fine. It's not the end of the world, right?
You ask me another question like that, I'll be calling you Niles again.
Come on, fuck off.
I just love how we asked you a question. We asked you a
before
question.
I come
and
to
we
Atlanta.
Didn't even have an answer.
Yeah,
I didn't even have an answer.
Yeah. I love that.
So, boy, the audience you guys got in Spittin' Chiclets, it just grew. What was the biggest jump, you think, in the audience from when you started to, like, all of a sudden? Listen, I get the atmosphere, the locker room, you said it. But what was, like, that year that all of a sudden you saw this jump and you really realized, shit, we got something going on here, big time?
We got some big name interviews. The big jump was when we got Crosby and McKinnon in Halifax.
Yeah.
So that was that kind of just, and then also we captured the first ever Sandbagger there. So that was another boom, big boost to the social series. So that was probably a time where it took another big jump, and probably one of the biggest from when I originally hopped on, because people were also like, all of a sudden I had a million Twitter followers and I was tweeting about this show I was doing. So that's why the original jump went from, I don't know what they were getting for downloads, maybe, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 on some, maybe some guests got over 80, but then we started getting like, you know, hundreds of thousands.
That's unbelievable. Then, yeah, good for you guys.
When did Barstool come in? When did Barstool come in?
Barstool was there early on. Brian McGonigal, okay. Barstool Sports, RA was doing blogs for them. So they took it over and made it on, put it on their platform 20 podcasts in.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. All right, Biz, before I let you go.
Yeah, this has been awesome. This is so fun. You guys have had awesome questions.
I want to ask you, if you got to write your own eulogy, what is the first line of it? You got to write your own eulogy. Give me your first line.
Eulogy is like something that is put in the paper about
my death. When you die, or I was to die, and someone's going to write a eulogy about you, but you got to write the first line. You want people to remember.
Something to be like passive and self-deprecating, to like push the attention off of, like, and like kind of just like be like, I hope you're all having a cocktail right now, fucking making fun of my nuances and how big of an idiot I was.
He was funny, self-deprecating, and...
Well, just like basically something to kind of get the mood shifted to a laugh and everybody being like, you know what, let's have some pops and tell stories about Biz being an idiot. Because I find it weird when, you know, like, yeah, like I just kind of from a eulogy perspective, just kind of like, I guess, thank everybody who made life awesome and make sure that they're having a big party to celebrate, you know, one last time, I guess.
Cool. Listen, Biz, I want to thank you for joining us. Awesome. It was awesome to have you. Again, we'll be watching, and I wish you continued success in what you're doing. You've really made a great second career for yourself. It's awesome. Awesome.
Boys,
to see.
I appreciate the tire pump. I'm so happy you guys are doing this. You guys are kicking ass. I'll never call you Niles again. And let's do it more often, man. Like I said, you guys, this was a
once
fun
a
conversation.
Week. Once a week, we'll have you on. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Raw Knuckles podcast. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe.